Next Step 141, February 17, 2011. Hey, this is Father Voskin. Yeah, of course, who would it be? Yes, this is Father Voskin, a priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast about life and love, about spirituality, while we take a look at the very fabric of our being through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy, polished up in a new manner. We call that Armodoxy. So we invite you for the next few minutes to kick back, relax, and take that view with us. This podcast is being brought to you by the good folks at Epostle.net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic Universe, and is part of the expanding vision of the Inishus Ministries. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. I am so glad you are with us today, and thank you for all the wonderful email and the feedback. You know, I have an uncle, in Uncle Gil, actually. Believe it or not, this is Armenian personality. We're talking about, I would say, early 60s, maybe late 1950s. He was a radio DJ in Blythe, California. Now, if you know where this is like on the border of California and Arizona. And he was a DJ over there. And my mom tells me that, well, I guess it must have been earlier than the 60s. Yeah, if my mom's telling me this, this must have been a little bit earlier, probably late 40s, because she was still at home. And she said that on the weekends, he'd bring home like these sacks full of mail, of letters addressed to him as the DJ. And I'm just like thinking, wow, you know, like the Blythe, California. I mean, like how many people are out there, especially like in the 50s, in the 40s, 50s? And getting mail, remember, you did put a stamp on it. What was it back then? Like 3 cents? 3 cents to mail something. And today, I guess the equivalent is fill up your inbox. I've got to tell you, I have been encouraged. No. It's not millions of letters. It's not even hundreds of letters. But quality letters, quality feedback. I've got to thank you. I want to publicly thank you because it is humbling in a sense. And it just reminds us that, you know, God's work is being done in a very small manner. And, well, we think it's a small manner, but it's reaching out to people that we never imagined. And I think the bigger story here is that the message of the Armenian Church, this 2,000-year-old message that has come to us, that has saved a people, that has given spirituality, has given comfort and brought hope and peace to a land that otherwise wouldn't know it, this message is still very relevant today. And it's not only relevant in the lives of Armenians, but it's finding that relevancy in the lives of people. We're going to talk about this in a few minutes. Actually, it's coming up a little bit later in the show because I had a chance to listen to this audiobook. It's called Letter to a Christian Nation by Sam Harris. I want to talk a little bit about that because he is an atheist, and actually he doesn't even like that expression because he's saying, well, you know, he says nobody believes that Elvis is still around, yet those people, well, I shouldn't say nobody believes, some people believe, right? But he says that there is no word to say, to express people who don't believe that Elvis is still alive. There's no word to describe people who don't believe in astrology, for instance. So why is there a word to talk about people who don't believe in God? Because God does not exist. God is an abstract. God is a figment of our imagination. So why are we saying this? It's very, very interesting the way he approaches this. It's very, I think, distorted too. Distorted in the sense that he's talking about a Christianity which, well, we don't need to even accept. I mean, that's, I think, and this is where I come back. Yeah, I know. Thank you, Ken. Yes, okay. What does Blythe, California have to do with all of this? How did we make the connection? Well, that's the point of it. I mean, this word is getting out there and people are absorbing it. This idea of Armodoxy, I mean, it's now coined. People are talking about Armodoxy. They're writing to me about Armodoxy. And really, it's the alternative. It's an intelligent alternative to what's being thrown out at you by the Christian world. And I mean this because, you know, the Armenian Orthodoxy evolved on its own. Yes, I know there were councils and people, but because Armenia itself was kind of isolated, the unique prayers, the unique experiences of Armenians, and I want to say the isolated experiences of Armenians, just like Blythe, California being isolated from the rest of California. You like that tie-in? Armenia being isolated kind of had a chance to have its Christianity evolve as it is. And that's why when you look at, okay, January 6th, we are the only people who are celebrating Christ's birthday on the original date. And because of that, we have a unique Diarantarach, which is not on Candlemas February 2nd, but is on February 14th. And because of that, Valentine's Day gets pushed out. We're going to be talking about that as well. You got to put this all together, and now you're coming up with a very unique system of belief, a system, a religious system. And so when we talk about Armodoxy, you're getting to the core of what Christianity is about. Basically, that message that, do you love me? If you'd love me, then love one another, as God says. I have a plastic Jesus in my office. It's a bobblehead Jesus. You know what those bobbleheads are? You know, you see them sometimes in the car. Well, my son got me this one because there's a small little area in my office. If you ever get a chance, we should have like a Dead Hives office video on YouTube. I remember, I think on YouTube there's some old ones from back in St. Andrew days in Cupertino. But you got to check out, there's like this little a shrine I've built over here. There's one small little, I think his name is Blinky, the Blinky fish, you know, from The Simpsons, the fish that has three eyes. Okay, he's up there. There's a few little yellow submarine icons up there, but there's also this bobblehead Jesus. And these are things that remind me of what this entire ministry is about. The three-eyed fish, if you know in The Simpsons, I mean, they're living in this town that has the claim to fame of this town is this nuclear power plant where just about everybody works. And nobody really seems to care that the fish have evolved with three eyes. And basically, this is what you catch in that water because it's so polluted. And it reminds me that once you start polluting that Christianity, well, what are you going to catch? What is the fish that's going to jump out of the pool of Christianity? It's going to be this polluted, distorted, and mutant evolution of what Christianity should be. And that's what really we have all around us. People killing in the name of Christ. I mean, does that even make sense? Does that even make sense? Christ, the incarnation of love, and people killing in the name of Christ? I mean, what does this mean? We have a Christian militia. Come on, folks. Something's wrong here. It's evolved into this three-eyed fish. It's Blinky. And right next to it, like I said, I've got this bobblehead Jesus. You know what those are. You know, they bobble around, you know. And my son gave this to me just as a reminder that, hey, this is what we are fighting against. We don't believe in plastic Jesuses. Jesus is not a bobblehead. Jesus came as an incarnation of love, and the message that he gave is so powerful that it's transforming. I mean, this past week, we sat there and we talked about, we got together, you know, we're trying to do this movement, this rally for Darfur, and it's going to take place March 6th. And on a flyer we had written, instead of commemorating a genocide, help stop one. Wild, isn't it? Instead of commemorating a genocide, let's stop one. And enough, what are you commemorating? What is there to commemorate? Instead of mourning a genocide, someone said. Yeah, I agree. Instead of mourning a genocide, let's help stop one. Well, here's the thing, we get caught up in the words and we forget. In fact, well, someone actually commented on the internet. I believe it was, well, I forgot where it was. Somebody made a comment saying that I find that appalling. What's appalling about it? Stop genocide. I mean, come on. What is the bottom line that Christ is teaching us? You need to get along. You need to love one another. By this they will know that you are my children. We are in the week of St. Valentine's. We talk about love as something that we just pass along some candy and some flowers. No, love is way deeper than that. It's much deeper than that. In fact, it's much deeper than what we've been taught. It's a combination. When you talk about love, it's not, you can't isolate it. You can't pigeonhole it. Oh, this is erotic love. This is filial love. This is agape love. No! It's all together. It's one love. And it's the love that Christ is giving us, in which we see agape love, in which we see filial love, in which we see erotic love. It all comes together. It's overwhelming. It consumes. It takes over. And when you have this love in your heart, you're able to transform all of the hatred that life can throw out at you. Yes, you can even overcome the wars. You can even overcome the genocides. You need it in your life. You can overcome your difficulties, difficult people, difficult situations, definitely. But on a grand scale, as a community, as a people, we can put this into action. And that love into action can transform, can change the darkest of the darkest. That's why what we're looking at when we're talking about March 6th, I'm going to be talking about that a little bit later too. That's the event coming up. March 6th is Pater Gentan, the beginning of Lent. And it culminates with Easter. And this year, Easter, think about it. East and West is going to be celebrating on the same day. Think about it. They're going to be celebrating on April 24th, the darkest day in modern human history. The beginning of the Armenian Genocide is coinciding with the brightest day of humanity, of the brightest day of the universe, where the power of love overcomes the power of evil, where death is conquered by life. Now we're talking Easter. All right, so we've got a great podcast for you today. We're going to be talking about all of these concepts. Take a look at this book that I told you about, Letter to a Christian Nation. We've got Ani with her bubbles. Actually, she's going to be sharing a Valentine wish with us. Yes, we're still in Valentine's week. We'll go backwards a little bit, and we'll celebrate that as well. We'll talk about all of these neat things in the next few minutes. But for right now, we start off each podcast with a song of the day. Here's today's. Enjoy.
Ան հոգես չես գիտեր, ինչ կա քո մասին, պատտում է քո խեղճ անձիդ վրասին, գամբրներով վարակներով միասին, փախիր այդ ձյան փախիր, որս կան է գալիս, լև որս կան է գալիս, դախուկները դախուր լալիս են լալիս, Le lalis en lalis Vorskana jrakov kezi mankuga Kuze zerkere ko aryunov lva Khagjali ko teryak saru zorkula Pakhir aytsyan pakhir vorskan negalis Le vorskan negalis Zakupnere takhur lalis en lalis Le lalis en lalis Vorskan gutchune kane karaka Կամ քեզի կսպանե, կամ քո զավակը, զուրջի անցնի հրացանի գնդակը, Փախիր այդյան փախիր, որս կան է գալիս, լե որս կան է գալիս, Զակուկները տխուր լալիս են լալիս, լե լալիս են լալիս, Pakhir aytsyan pakhir vorskan negalis le vorskan negalis 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 Pakhir aytsyan pakhir vorskan negalis Le vorskan negalis
That is a beautiful voice, isn't it? That is Parik Nazarian, and that's off of a CD called Cycle of Life. It was produced about 10-12 years ago, and it's available. We'll put a link on our show notes to where you could pick it up. Not only this song, but all of her songs. Just beautiful voice. And I don't know what it was. This morning I just got up. It was one of those days. I said, that's what the song of the day is going to be. It's going to be a Parik Nazaryan song. One way or another, we'll get through it. And I picked out that one, Pachir Aydiyam. It's basically directions on how to escape, how to get away. Oh, well, I'll let you figure out the rest of it. But right now, I want to share with you some ideas that have evolved during this week, especially because we started off this week with Valentine's Day. And Valentine's Day was on February 14th, and it also coincides with Diyarun Taraj, the presentation of the Lord. And I shared with you the evolution of this last week. We got some interesting comments about it, people that had never even heard of it. In fact, we got an interesting comment from a gentleman who had been in the church all of his life and had never heard of this feast called Diyarun Taraj. But obviously, if you figure it as the presentation of the Lord, and once you look at the scriptural references, particularly in Luke chapter 2, you start understanding how it comes about 40 days after Christmas. And obviously, if you're in the West, that 40-day period is on Groundhog's Day, Candlemas, February 2nd. It also happens to be the midwinter, and after that midwinter, you're hoping for better days, you're hoping for some sunshine, and the beginning of new life. So all of these themes come together in the celebration of Diyarun Taraj. But here in the West, of course, it is Valentine's Day. Now, This is what got me. I said that there was an evolution of thinking, because right on Valentine's Day from Holy Etchmiadzin, we received the latest videos, and they're very good about it. They have a TV station in Etchmiadzin, or that services Etchmiadzin. It's called Shogagat, the rays of milk. That's another story. Got to get into that. I promise that's coming up. Anyway, it's called Shogagat TV. And they produce a lot of the footage that you see on the internet. And I know in Armenia you see on regular television as well. Do check them out. They have their own channel too on YouTube. But I started seeing these videos of the celebration of Diyarun Taraj, of the presentation. And unique to the Armenian celebration is this big bonfire and couples jumping over it. And again, last week, I spoke about that bonfire. Now, I want to take it one step further today, because what happened is that you see that the Catholicos of all Armenians, His Holiness Karekin II, has designated that day as the blessing of newlyweds. And he brings together the newlyweds to celebrate Diyarun Taraj, the presentation of the Lord. And of course, the tie-in is not is that he's presented to the temple 2,000 years ago, but he's presented to your temple, to your life. And so in this bonfire, again, relics from an ancient time coming today, people take that light and remind themselves that Christ is the light of the world. Remember, rituals, formulas, people need these things, tangible ways of understanding the intangible, understanding the abstract. And so these beautiful symbols are there to help us. And last week I spoke quite a bit about, like, allowing that light to come into your life, allowing that flame to really come and overwhelm you, much like St. John the Forerunner, the Baptist, said, I baptize you with water, but he who comes after me baptizes with the Holy Spirit and with fire. Yes, that fire baptism means a cleansing. It means a new beginning for each of us. Now, what the Catholicos did, interestingly enough, on February 14th, Diyarun Taraj, if you look at these videos, he's got newlyweds coming in. I thought it was so clever, because I happened to be in Armenia 2 years ago, right on this feast day, or 3 years ago, in 2009, I guess. Yeah, 2 years ago. And on that day, he was just starting this tradition, bringing the newlyweds into church. And there was the divine liturgy took place, and then the blessing of the newlywed couples. Nobody kind of understood it until I got back to the States, and then it all made sense. basically you've got this Western celebration of Valentine's, which has really lost its meaning. It's relegated to the idea of exchanging flowers and candy. And, you know, I love those little kisses too. What do they call those little, little hearts with the "be mine, you're my Valentine, I love you"? In fact, this year I saw some signs of the times, one of them that said, "email me." Yes, it was, in fact, it even had the at symbol on there. I guess, yeah, it's evolving. But basically, a loss for what love is. Basically, we're talking about this idea of love in an abstract way, and rather than a concrete way of being within relationships. And so Valpar, or the Catholicos, has brought together young couples, married couples, young married couples, and newlyweds. And there's a really, really cute video if you get a chance to see it. It's the couple that get married in the town of Oshagan. I won't say anything more than that, except I know when you watch it, you'll go, "Cute. That is cute." Anyway, why does Valpar do that? Well, basically to give an answer to the Western Valentine message, right? And I thought that was beautiful. Because do you know what the story of Valentine is? Actually, it's very interesting because the Valentine story began exactly in the same manner. It is celebrated as lovers' holiday, giving candy and flowers and other gifts between couples, but it originated in the 5th century in Rome as a tribute to Saint Valentine, who happened to be a Catholic bishop. Now listen to the story. For 800 years prior to the establishment of Valentine's Day, the Romans had practiced a pagan celebration in mid-February commemorating young men's rite of passage to the god Lupercus. The celebration featured a lottery in which young men would draw the names of teenage girls from a box. The girl assigned to each young man, in a manner, would be his personal, sexual, and physical companion during the remaining year. In an effort to do away with this pagan festival, Pope Galatius ordered a slight change in the lottery. Are you ready for this? What do you suppose he did? These popes. Instead of the names of young women, the box would now contain the names of saints. Remarkable! Both men and women were allowed to draw from the box. Now think about this, 5th century, allowing women to do this way ahead of the times, right? I mean, we didn't allow women to vote in this country until 1920. And we're talking about the 5th century, drawing lotteries for saints. And there the women were drawing these lotteries, both men and women. And needless to say, many of the young Roman men were not too pleased with the rule change. Yeah, here, have a saint instead of a woman. Instead of the pagan god Lupercus, the church looked for a substitute patron saint of love to take his place. They found an appropriate choice in Valentine, who in AD 270 had been beheaded by Emperor Caladius. Caladius had determined that married men made poor soldiers, so he banned marriage from his empire, but Valentine would secretly marry these couples, and the couples that would come to him. And when Caladius, the emperor, found out about Valentine, he first tried to convert him to paganism, but Valentine reversed the strategy, trying instead to convert Caladius, and well, you know the rest. The rest becomes history. That's instant qualification for beheading, and that was the fate of Saint Valentine. Well, look at that. Here's a pope who took the initiative to change a pagan ritual into something that would have more meaning, something that would have a spiritual side to it. I applaud the Catholicos. A couple years ago, he said that, let's bring that into Armenian. Okay, you've got these pagan rituals of running over the fire. You've got this, well, almost paganized system of showing our affection through candy and flowers on Valentine's Day, let's make it more concrete. Let's bring the newlyweds together and let's honor that marriage that they have. I think that's beautiful. And I think that I wanted to share that with you today, because really, when we talk about Armodoxy, what are we talking about? About taking from the past and applying to today. This has been our battle from day one when we started this ministry. Making the faith relevant for today. It means nothing if it sits on a bookshelf. It means nothing to say you're Orthodox if all you do is you're going to pick up some old saints that have no relevance today. But the ability to take those old saints and take the writings and take the scripture and put it together and apply it for today is really the call that the church has. It is what religion is all about. It is the way that you bring relevancy. You, yes, you. As a member of the church. As a member of the living body of Christ. Not designating it, not giving it away, not giving that power to somebody else, not saying somebody else will take care of it, but you are there. You happen to be a part of it. This week, for instance, at the end of the week, we celebrate Saint Sarkis. St. Sarkis, a patron saint of those who wish, those who need. Many people approach it with fasting and with prayer. The real challenge is, how do you find the faith that St. Sarkis had? How do you find the faith of St. Valentine? How do you find the faith that is implied in Dhyarantaraj, the presentation of the Lord into your temple, the temple where love is the guiding force? We've got Ani now. Let her chime in with her Valentine's story, too. And we'll be back in a few minutes, too. Here's Ani's Bubbles for this week.
A Valentine's Story. Today's Spiritual Bubble. John Blanchard stood up from the bench, straightened his army uniform, and studied the crowd of people making their way through Grand Central Station. He looked for a girl whose heart he knew, but whose face he didn't. The girl with the rose. His interest in her had begun 13 months before in a Florida library. Taking a book off the shelf, he found himself intrigued, not with the words of the book, but with the notes penciled in the margin. The soft handwriting reflected a thoughtful soul and insightful mind. In the front of the book, he discovered the previous owner's name, Miss Hollis Maynell. With time and effort, he located her address. She lived in New York City. He wrote her a letter introducing himself and inviting her to correspond. The next day, he was shipped overseas for service in World War II. During the next year and 1 month, the two grew to know each other through the mail. Each letter was a seed falling on a fertile heart. A romance was budding. Blanchard requested a photograph, but she refused. She felt that if he really cared, it wouldn't matter what she looked like. When the day finally came for him to return from Europe, they scheduled their first meeting, 7 o'clock p.m. at the Grand Central Station in New York. "You'll recognize me," she wrote, "by the red rose I'll be wearing on my lapel." So at 7 o'clock, he was at the station, looking for the girl whose heart he loved, but whose face he'd never seen. I'll let Mr. Blanchard tell you what happened. A young woman was coming toward me, her figure long and slim. Her blonde hair lay back in curls from her delicate ears. Her eyes were blue as flowers. Her lips and chin had a gentle firmness, and in her pale green suit, she was like springtime come alive. I started toward her, entirely forgetting to notice that she was not wearing a rose. As I moved, a small provocative smile curled her lips. "Going my way, sailor?" she murmured. Almost uncontrollably, I made one step closer to her, and then I saw Hollis Maynell. She was standing almost directly behind the girl, a woman well past 40. She had graying hair tucked under a worn hat. She was more than plump, her thick ankled feet thrust into low-heeled shoes. The girl in the green suit was walking quickly away. I felt as though I was split in two. So keen was my desire to follow her, and yet so deep was my longing for the woman whose spirit had truly companioned me and upheld my own. And there she stood. Her pale, plump face was as gentle and sensible. Her gray eyes had a warm and kindly twinkle. I did not hesitate. My fingers gripped the small, worn, blue leather copy of the book that was to identify her. This would not be love, but it would be something precious, something perhaps even better than love, a friendship for which I had been and must ever be grateful for. I squared my shoulders and saluted and held out the book to the woman, even though, while I spoke, I felt choked by the bitterness of my disappointment. "I'm Lieutenant John Blanchard, and you must be Miss Maynell. I'm so glad I could meet you. May I take you to dinner?" The woman's face broadened into a tolerant smile. "I don't know what this is about, son," she answered, "but the young lady in the green suit who just went by, she begged me to wear this rose on my coat, and she said if you were to ask me out to dinner, I should go and tell you that she is waiting for you in the big restaurant across the street. She said it was some kind of a test." It's not difficult to understand and admire Miss Maynell's wisdom. The true nature of a heart is seen in its response to the unattractive. This has been your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven.
Thank you, Ani. Beautiful story. And we always count on you to give us these beautiful stories that kind of tie it all together. And that was toward the end of our Valentine celebration. We get this opportunity once a year to celebrate this day called Valentine's Day. And as I said a few minutes ago, we want to see it really have some meaning so that it's not just about exchanging candy, but really exchanging the love that we have in our hearts, the love that really Christ commands us to exchange with one another. So appreciate it in any story that gets that message across. Hey, that's what we're all about, and telling you what we're about. Here's Susie with an announcement about In Issues, about Epostle Ministries, and we'll be back in a few minutes with the last segment of our podcast for today. But for right now, here's Susie.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the third year of production and growing daily with new listeners around the globe. This new message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. Epostle.net is the voice of Armadoxy, committed to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we need to avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at the inhisshoes.org website. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
You caught me with some coffee in my mouth, yes. Had time to sneak out for a cup of coffee with our good friend Gor Mkhitaryan. We've got something cooking for next week. You won't want to miss next week's Next Step. Yes, Gor, he's made some promises to me, and you're all invited next week on the Next Step. But for this week, Susie's message is so important. You know, this podcast, this ministry, epostle.net, works on your donations. And yeah, we get it out. We try to get it out as quickly, as efficiently as we can, but it does cost money. There are resources. There's the bandwidth. There's the space on the servers. There's the equipment that we use, the microphones. Well, I don't need to go on with all the details, but it does take money, and it is supported through your generosity. So keep us in your prayers, and in those prayers, ask how you can be a partner in this ministry by making regular contributions, by making regular donations. You can check out the donate button on our website, as well as send in your donations. via the mail. We are at 632 West Stocker Street in Glendale, California, 91202. That's at the Armenian Youth Ministry Center. And we're just so excited that things are moving along in Apostle. In fact, this week we got picked up by the Western Diocese, and you can check them out on Vimeo. And they've got our they've got a small little section that has become regular now. It's some messages, some 12-minute, 12, 13-minute messages that we're producing for the Western Diocese. Very excited, because it also signals, well, I'm going to leave it for, it. No, it says signal, a change in Armadoxy. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to leave it for you to figure out what the big changes are. We'll be talking about that in the next few weeks, but very excited about where we're reaching, how far we're reaching, and want to, again, thank you for the record number of downloads. Thank you very much for keeping us in your prayers, and your donations are always well received and much appreciated. This week I came across this book called Letter to a Christian Nation. Actually, I got a chance to hear it. It was an audio book. I don't even want to tell you why I picked it up, because it wasn't because of the content. It was probably the price. I found it at a very bargain rate. But despite the bargain price, it was interesting that it was published on Simon & Schuster and really had some best-selling features to it, written by best-selling author Sam Harris as a response to the much mail that he received to his bestseller, The End of Faith. And let me just take a quick excerpt from this. He says, 44% of the American population is convinced that Jesus will return to judge the living and the dead sometime in the next 50 years. Imagine the consequences if any significant component of the U.S. government actually believed that the world was about to end and that its ending would be glorious. The fact that nearly half of the American population apparently believes this purely on the basis of religious dogma should be considered a moral and intellectual emergency. And in this emergency, what the author is talking about, Sam Harris, he's talking about us really putting away superstition, putting away religious ideas, and really adopting a very scientific platform that is validated by our senses, that is validated by the world around us. I found this book to be very fascinating. Fascinating in many senses, because I felt like many of the topics that he talked about were topics that we've explored here on The Next Step. We've actually discussed them, that basically the fundamentalist way of approaching, that the Bible is true, and you've heard me say this many times, the Bible is true, but it is not factual. And when you take that Bible as fact, you're going to run into a lot of problems. I mean, how many times have you heard me say that, try to understand with your heart? And the problem is, when you start taking the Bible as fact, you start thinking with your brain. I run into this all the time. It's really a Western-Eastern issue. In the East, you really understand with your heart. You try to get this entire holistic approach to it. Now, what Harris says in this small book, Letter to a Christian Nation, he's really picking on religion in general, and he's talking about the fundamentalist wing of those religions. Because I find that many of the things that he says just have no basis in the faith that I profess. I mean, we're never one that wants to advocate for war as a means of bringing about peace. I mean, it doesn't even make sense. You know, pick up a gun so that we can have peace. Doesn't make sense. The only way that you can get peace is by, well, advocating for peace. He talks about the separation that we create as human society. I remember Dr. King in one of his famous speeches, he makes the point that America is most separated when? Sunday mornings at 11 in the morning. I mean, because of our religion, we separate ourselves. We find differences rather than commonalities, which I believe is the purpose of all religion. I'm talking about true religion should be a means of getting us to rise to the occasion of being human. Let me play a piece. Here's a little excerpt from the book Letter to a Christian Nation by Sam Harris.
Billions of people share your belief that the creator of the universe wrote or dictated one of our books. Unfortunately, there are many books that pretend to divine authorship, and they make incompatible claims about how we all must live. Competing religious doctrines have shattered our world into separate moral communities, and these divisions have become a continual source of human conflict. In response to this situation, many sensible people advocate something called religious tolerance. While religious tolerance is surely better than religious war, tolerance is not without its problems. Our fear of provoking religious hatred has rendered us unwilling to criticize ideas that are increasingly maladaptive and patently ridiculous. It has also obliged us to lie to ourselves, repeatedly and at the highest levels of discourse, about the compatibility between religious faith and scientific rationality. Our competing religious certainties are impeding the emergence of a viable global civilization. Religious faith. Faith that there is a God who cares what name he is called. Faith that Jesus is coming back to earth. Faith that Muslim martyrs go straight to paradise. Is on the wrong side of an escalating war of ideas. Religion raises the stakes of human conflict much higher than tribalism, racism, or politics ever can.
Now, I gotta say, he makes a convincing argument throughout the entire book. And at the end, his solution is, let's do away with religion. And I have to take exception. Obviously, I'm a priest. I'm going to take exception. But even more than just because of who I am, there is something fundamentally wrong in his treaty, in his understanding. And that is that all of life is measured by weights and measures, by the things that are tangible. And I could accept that. I could accept that all of reality can be tested, and so we can come to it. But is there a part of reality, and I throw this out as a question to you, is there a part of reality that you've had in your life that cannot be tested, that cannot be put to the scientific test? Obviously, there is. That's what we call religion. I mean, James Joyce talks about this early. What was that? 20th century, right? James Joyce talks about the variety of religious experiences. And you know that in life, there are different types of experiences that you have. Some of them cannot be explained, and we relegate this to, we put this under the category of religion. In fact, mystery, deep, inscrutable, is the way we understand God. And I don't shy away from this. I don't shy away from this. This book, reading this book, gave me an opportunity to really think about many of the things that I hold dear to me, the faith that I hold dear to me. And there are some things that I need to say, that I need to express as the tenets of what we define as armadoxy. First of all, we want to strip away what religion has become and really get down to the essence of what the faith is about. Do you believe that a person, Jesus Christ, came to this world, and what was his message? His message was pure love. To be able to spread that love, how? By loving people, by caring for people, and forgiving people. Now, that's an element that you won't find anywhere else, but I believe that it is uniquely Christian. In that forgiveness, we understand the ultimate power of what we call God. And in understanding God, what are we understanding? But ourselves. We're understanding what it means to be in the highest form of humanity. Think about that for a moment. By understanding God, we understand who we are as people. And this, for this reason, John the Evangelist says, you cannot love God who you do not see when you do not love the brother who you do see. Let's go through that. I can claim all I want that I love God, intangible, away from us. But I do not love my brother who I do see, who I have to work with, who I have to spend time with, who I have to share feelings with. And John the Evangelist, in no uncertain terms, says, you cannot do that. And I think, to me, a religion that expresses this, and this is why I tell you all the time in Armodoxy, want to get down to the bottom line. What is this faith about? I think a religion that expresses itself in these terms, that you cannot be hypocritical in your faith, is a religion that is worth our investigation, is worth following. And this is where I take exception with this book, and I take exception with all atheists. Not because I'm a priest, but because on rational terms, how can I love other people? This is not something that I can measure by scientific instruments. The love that I have for other people is something that comes from within, from my heart. And that love is what is missing out of our general equation of life. Christ brings that love back into it. What we as people do with it is our fault. It's not God's fault. I'm not an apologist for God. God could definitely take care of himself. He doesn't need me to apologize for him. But I look at the world around me and I say that there is something that is missing out of it. And that is the element of love. Love is missing from that world. And if I could put that love back into that world, and if I can do it only by my life, by reaching out to others, by helping others, by caring for others, by extending myself to others, then I feel like, okay, I've done my share. I've contributed to the big pot called humanity. And again, this book, it gave me a lot of concern about where we're headed as people. And yes, it is terrible what we have done with religion, the religious wars that we have fought, the idea that behind many of the wars, many of the problems we've had in life, it is because of the religious beliefs that we've had as humanity, is terrible. Let's strip those away. Let's strip those away and let's come down to the bottom line. What is necessary for us to love one another? Love one another, by this people will know that you are my children, says our Lord Jesus Christ. So in other words, to be a Christian is what? To first and foremost, love one another. Now, if you can't do that, if love is missing from your life, you don't have what? The right to be called a Christian. It follows. And so these attacks against the Christians are not necessarily against the faith, but against a certain practice of Christianity. Much like the attacks on communism when they waged it against the Soviet Union. We're not an attack on communism, but against the Soviet interpretation of communism. Much like today, the attacks on democracy are not on the democracy as a concept, but in the way the imperialist ideas, or the way that a government will take that democracy and use it for its own gains and forget about the people. Forget about the people it serves. They are warranted. And so, first of all, I want to say that this book I welcome because, yes, it is counter to what I believe. It is not an attack on my faith. It is an attack on a fundamentalist reality that has overcome and taken over the world. But I welcome this book because it gives us an opportunity to think about ourselves in the process of being human, in the process of living in this world that we share with so many different other people. I said earlier, yes, I firmly believe it. The Bible is completely true. It's about God's love for his creation. God is love. It's about love. That's the only word that makes sense in that, in our lives, right? The Bible is true. Is it factual? No, absolutely not. Is it factual? Absolutely not. If you believe that the world was created in 6 days, days that you and I know, I'm not playing on words. I'm not saying, oh, well, one day means a billion years for God. I'm talking about 6 days, which many fundamentalists do. Then you're wrong. It's outright wrong. If you believe that that God decided that he was going to flood the earth, and he had this big flood, and Noah was the only person who was good, then there's something wrong in what you believe. Because one day earlier to that flood, there was a baby who was born, and that baby was innocent. That baby did not deserve to die in a flood. What that story of the flood does is it teaches us some values. I question even that. But you want to understand the entire story of what the Bible is as one book from beginning to end, then you open up the pages of Armodoxy, of what we've been teaching over here. It's about love. The key is given to us by Nerses Shnoradi. He says, the name of love is Jesus. Seranun Jesus. And he says, if you have that name, if you have that love, you can crush the most difficulties, you can crush the pain and the evil in the world. I want to start from there. I want to understand my Bible. I want to understand my faith as an expression of that love. So if I've got the key, right? If I've got the primer, and the primer is that Jesus' name is love, why am I not learning about Jesus? Let me learn everything that he had to offer. The most important thing is he offered his life. He sacrificed himself for others. Can I do that with my life? Can I find time in my life, in my busy schedule, with all of the complications that I have, with my tweeting, with my Facebook, with my texting, with my email? Can I put all that aside and realize that, hey, I need to communicate with my brothers and sisters? I need to love. I need to extend myself. That's how basic it is. It's not more complicated than this. That's the basis of Armodoxy. Do you get it? That's it. There's no big magic to it. I think that Jesus came down when he looked at the paraplegic. Do you remember that story? They bring the paraplegic to Jesus. And he looks at him and he says, your sins are forgiven. And people go, wait a minute, hold on. What are you doing over here? What do you mean his sins are forgiven? We brought you a paraplegic. And he says to him, which one is easier to do? To tell him that his sins are forgiven, or to say, rise, take up your bed and walk? But he says, okay, that's what you want. He says, rise, take up your bed and walk. And immediately the paraplegic came to life and he walked away. And people look at that story and they say, wow, here is a miracle. No, you missed the point, folks. You missed it. You missed it in his first statement. He said, your sins are forgiven. That's what was easier. That was what was necessary. And that's what we need to do to one another. We need to look at each other and say, not get up and walk, but your sins are forgiven. I love you. I care for you. I don't care what you've done to me in the past. I don't care what I've done in the past. I want to know that I can move on. I can put my sins to one side. I can put my past, my baggage, my luggage, everything to one side and move forward. Because this train is the train of life. And I want to go forward. I want to move forward. I want to see what life is all about. I want to enjoy every bit that life has to offer me. To me, that is the calling of Armodoxy. Not to look in old stories, but to look and see that the key is Jesus. And in Jesus we see one incarnation, one revelation, the revelation of love. Okay, we are at the end of today's show. I hope you enjoyed it and you remembered that I said that we would learn a word a week. And I got to tell you, in response to the emails, to the comments that we got by people who were surprised that the first word that I chose was peace instead of this word, and in reference to St. Valentine's Day, Sayat Nova, Diyarın Taraç, and in reference to what I just talked about, we will make today's official word, the second word that we learned together, the word for love in Armenian is... Thank you. I just got through saying it has to be accessible, and you've got all this fanfare going on. The word for love in Armenian is ser. Very easy to say. Very easy to spell. Ser. S-E-R. Ser. S-E-R. Ser. This is the word that we learned this week. We could pronounce it, we could spell it, but most importantly, I challenge you to live it. Let it live in your heart. Let it begin from your heart and extend yourself to others, to love people that are close to you, people that are not so close, people that are distant to you. Learn the real love, as Jesus Christ did in his life here on earth, became an example of living love, that even to the extent of people who betrayed him, who even crucified him, looking down and saying, Father, forgive them. Not because they came and said, please forgive us. In fact, quite the opposite. Not knowing what they did, he says, forgive. So too, let that love shine in our lives. Let it be the point at which we forgive ourselves, forgive others, people that have hurt us in many ways. Let's put it to the past and move forward with the love that Christ puts in our heart. That's the word that we leave you with. And we want to thank you for joining us today. I hope you've enjoyed today's show as much as we've enjoyed producing it. We want to invite you during the week to check in with our website, inhisshoes.org, where you'll find information about what we're doing. Most importantly, we're going to be out celebrating the Feast of Podigantum, the beginning of Lent, with a very special gathering we're going to be doing in Los Angeles's Griffith Park, a very big venue, because we have big hopes. What we want to do is raise awareness for Darfur, and we're inviting you to join us that afternoon, March 6th in Los Angeles. I know we've got some people flying in from different places. We just got a confirmation from Gor Mkhitaryan, who is going to be playing at that event. We've got Melina Kurdian, who's going to be playing at that event, music, and we've got a lot of information. Our good friend Gabriel Starring, just returning from Darfur, he's going to be going back to the refugee camps in Chad. We're going to be making some videos that he'll be taking with him. We've got our good friend Gregory Balerian joining us for a special art project. You'll get to meet all the usual crew and cast you've come to love here on The Next Step, including, well, Susie, our producer, for Ken up in the booth, who will be down from the booth that day, and Ani with her bubbles. Hey, listen, we invite you to join us on that day, and join us on the web at inhisshoes.org. You'll find information about that, about our fasting programs coming up for Easter, and of course, all the wonderful work that we're doing through apostle.net. That includes our regular podcasts, our video casts, our streaming of Bible study videos, just a bunch of stuff. You won't want to miss it. That's apostle.net. Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe. For Susie, our producer, Ken up in the booth, on the inner bubbles, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience, not valid with any other author.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.